Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. The interlol, that's it. It's done, finished, over, kaput, finito. End of story. Until the next one. Yeah, there's another one next month. Ow. But hey, that's because they're having playoffs, you see, because the European Championships in France next summer, it's a big tournament. It's like 24 or 48 or 64 teams. I don't know. It's a lot of teams. Should have looked this up, but it is a lot of teams. Wales are going to be there, for example. Aaron Ramsey, he's going to represent his country at an international tournament. Wales' first international tournament since the 1958 World Cup. So well done to Aaron Ramsey and to Wales. Ireland are going to be in a playoff. Who knows who they're going to be playing? I don't know. Don't think it really matters, to be honest. It's all much of a much at this stage. They either will or they won't. But because of the size of the tournament, every single country in Europe has qualified. Every single one of them, without exception. Apart from, well, there was one, wasn't there, in midweek? Didn't qualify.
Oh, and it's no goal! Robin van Persie, of all people, the man who was brought on to try and rescue the Dutch, scores against the Dutch.
Perfect header if it's at the other end. Lovely placement.
Just make it clear, of course, that this is to do with Van Persie and Van Persie alone. It has nothing to do with the Netherlands, who provided me with my very, very first ever football memory. Yeah, it's completely true. My first ever football memory is of the 1978 World Cup final. First Arsenal memory is the 1979 FA Cup final. I'm sure I must have seen Arsenal because I had all the football books and the Rothmans books and the stats books, and I had those from a very young age, but I can't really remember much about what I saw, what football I saw on the television. And I was so distraught that night when Argentina won the World Cup. I was so up for Holland, and the guy hits the post, and then extra time, and they lose, and there's the ticker tape. And I think that game has had an effect on me throughout my entire life. I don't know if you have a recurring dream at all. I have one or two recurring dreams, one of which is that I'm in the 1978 World Cup final stadium. And maybe it's just because I was a small boy and I was looking at it on the television, but it always seemed to me that the stands were extremely steep, very sheer-faced. So I have this dream from time to time. I still have it where I'm kind of strapped into the seat, but literally it's like so, it's almost vertical. You're sitting in there and you feel like you could fall down all the way down to the bottom, and there's all the ticker tape. So look, this is nothing to do with the Netherlands, but you know, from time to time you just have to take these moments to enjoy when somebody like Robin van Persie scores an own goal that proves quite costly indeed. So my sympathies to any Dutch listeners who are, you know, vexed and flummoxed and unhappy about not going to the European Championships. I think it'll be a poorer tournament without you. The internal squabbles that happen within your squad before every single one of these tournaments, I'm going to miss those, but it's really all to do with Robin. Whew, fun times. But it's been a good interlol overall for our attacking players. Now, I'm saying this, recording this, not quite sure of how groiny Alexis Sanchez's groin is. Now, I'm hoping, given that he is the almost perfect physical specimen, he's got these quite stretchy, elastic groins that can take the sort of punishment that no man's groin should be able to take. Just lashes on a bit of the old deep heat, some kind of warming salve, and sits there for a few minutes, and everything's good again. I'm hoping that's very much the case, because if he comes back and picks up where he left off, three goals for Chile, I think. Yes, three goals. One against Brazil, two against Peru. And obviously that comes after his goal-scoring exploits against Manchester United, a hat-trick against Leicester. The man is figuratively on fire, in a footballing sense. And if he comes back and picks up where he left off, that would be very good indeed. But Olivier Giroud, whew, poor Olivier. He's had a hard time of it, and he's talking about how he's got to be more mentally strong. I think that's true. I think that shows great awareness. He does have to be more mentally strong, not simply because of the situation he finds himself in now behind Theo Walcott in the pecking order, but in general, he needs to be a bit more mentally strong, I think. But look, it is what it is, and the situation he finds himself in is a bit of an unusual one at Arsenal, because he has been more or less the undisputed number one striker for a long time, and now he's clearly not. That's not to say things won't change throughout the season. He could find a spell of form that could get his way back into the team. Theo Walcott might not be able to keep this up consistently, in which case you're looking for someone like Giroud to come in and pick up the baton. But he scored twice for France against Denmark. Little help from Kasper Schmeichel, as we were saying on the Arscast section, but he's going to come back and feel good about himself. He has got 3 Premier League goals to his name this season already, which is actually one more than Theo Walcott. So, you know, perhaps some of the criticism leveled at him is just a touch of familiarity more than him being an absolutely terrible, terrible player, which he's not. But now he's in a situation where he has to fight for his place, and 2 goals while away on international duty will do him some good. Joel Campbell, whether or not you think he's got what it takes to make it with Arsenal, and I'll admit here now, I'm not sure that he's got a long-term future with us, but then I said that about Coquelin as well because of his situation and, you know, a little bit of track record of getting this thing completely wrong. But hey, if he surprises me, all well and good. But in the absence of Welbeck, he's got to provide that bit of extra cover, attacking cover on the bench. He hadn't scored for 18 games for Costa Rica. And his last goal in domestic football was back in May for Villarreal. Before that, it was the World Cup in 2014. And before that, again, his last domestic goal was when he was on loan with Olympiacos, I think. So, you know, he's not been the most prolific, but a goal for him against the USA, well, that will help. That'll do him some good. And maybe, just maybe, when the time comes, when we need him, because inevitably, we're probably going to at some point, whether that's in the Capital One Cup or as a late substitute when we need a goal, who knows? But it's good that he scored a goal. Theo Walcott scored a goal. Santi Cazorla, only one of his goals last season wasn't from the penalty spot. And this is a guy who can do incredible things with a football. His technical ability is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. But when it comes to his shooting, it's like a bit all over the place and has been for a while. Good from the penalty spot, but, you know, he should be scoring more goals. 2 goals for him against Luxembourg. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, he got a goal as well. It's good. So it's good for these attacking players. Aaron Ramsey, he got a goal also. So it's all good, provided these guys don't come back knackered. They've gone away and they've got goals, and that will give them confidence and belief, and hopefully that will translate into good performances, better performances, and goals for us as well. I like it. I like it. I'm not usually a fan of the interlaw, but assuming that they're not bollocksed, like fucked, then I have to say I'm a fan of what's happened in this interlaw.
Uy, wow. Gol en propia meta, 0-3. Ha marcado Van Persie en su propia portería. Al intentar despejar, Van Persie marca en la portería equivocada en su partido número 101. 0-3, Van Persie en propia puerta.
Anyway, the Arsenal AGM was on yesterday, and we're going to talk to Jeremy Wilson from The Telegraph about what went on there. But there were some scenes, apparently. Yep. People questioning Stan Kroenke over the old £3 million thing. Think it's safe to say it all got a little bit out of hand, as our exclusive recorded from inside the AGM audio clip demonstrates.
Yeah, I've got a question for Mr. Kroenke.
Go ahead, my son. What is your question?
You were recently paid £3 million for services rendered. Can you please expand on what those services were?
Well, they were services that were rendered to Arsenal. And in the sense that they were rendered services, I did unto Arsenal render them.
But specifically, what were those services that you rendered?
Well, I think if you take any kind of service and you render it in the sense that it is then rendered, it becomes a rendered service. And I did indeed render those services, and thusly, I was paid for the rendering of said services.
Mr. Crockett, I feel like you're being a bit, evasive here. Is there any chance that you could go into specifics about what exactly you did for that money?
Well, yes, I could do that. But, obviously, I'm not gonna.
It's because you're a big moustache-faced wanker.
Sir Chips, can you, deal with this gentleman, please?
My pleasure, boss. Right, mate, get out of here. You fucking head, get out.
You can't tell me what to do. You're named after potatoes.
Yeah, I said fucking get out.
Oh, come on, you old fucker, I'll smash your head in.
I'd like to see you try.
Fun times at the Arsenal AGM. But hey, I have an idea. We should find out what actually happened. That will be good. So joining me now to discuss all the goings-on at the AGM and a bit of football too, it's Jeremy Wilson from The Telegraph. Hi there.
Hi.
Let's begin with the AGM. It took place yesterday. As ever, a mix of good and bad and funny and maybe not so funny. Can we start with some of the good stuff anyway, which normally revolves around Arsene Wenger? And when he talks in that meeting, regardless of what sort of pressure he's under or what people think of him at that time, and we know opinions change a bit, he's always a fantastic speaker, a fantastic orator. And from reading the tweets and everything, it looked like he pulled it out of the bag again.
Yeah, I think that was when the mood was most sort of happy, really, when Arsene Wenger was speaking and when he was introduced. I think a few years ago you could sense a certain more tension around him, and it's obviously still a little bit on a goes result by result a bit, and a tiny bit on the knife edge. But I do sense that the 2FA Cup, and I think people can see that the squad is more likely to challenge to actually win the league this year. So there's definitely less sort of tension around him than there was a few years ago. It can obviously change very quickly, and I think he recognises that, and he spoke very well. I thought what was interesting as well, apart from how he talked about the season just gone and the year that had gone, and he pointed out that Arsenal had the most points in 2015, and I think he genuinely believes that the team can go close this year. He also talked a bit more about the future than sometimes he has done, and he sort of said, I want to bring big success back. I keep working to the last day, I'm more determined than ever to the last day of my contract. And then sort of it was a bit on sort of life after him as well. He was saying that what was most important to him was that the next person was in the position to be even more successful than him. Now, I'm sure he hasn't really made any decisions about the future. I think he very much works contract to contract and then decides how he feels a few months or even right up until the end of a contract, as he did last time. But he's obviously given thought to how he wants it all to end, and that, I thought that was interesting as well.
I mean, he is essentially going to be the last legacy manager in English football, a guy like Ferguson or like Wenger who's been at a club for a very long time. And there's always been that sense with him, hasn't there, that he has been mindful of what might come after him in terms of the decisions that he makes, both in the long term, let's say looking at something like the stadium project, but also in the medium term and the players that he's brought in and that kind of stuff. And he was talking a bit about, with Ivan Gazidis as well, the potential that the club has to go out and buy the best players. There was also perhaps something from Gazidis that we could have heard the same thing from the AGM in 2011, 2012, 2013 about the way that the club is structured, that they want to buy players, they want to bring players through, and they want to retain players. Was there anything specific about why the club chose not to spend more than they did this summer?
It was really, he made this sort of big point about our squad is a lot stronger than it was a few years ago, therefore to get the quality that makes a difference is more difficult. It gets progress as our squad gets better, it gets progressively more difficult to find players that will improve it. And he was actually saying, and if you don't buy the right quality, you actually end up putting yourself in a worse position. That's more irresponsible, and I think he said that shows less ambition than actually waiting for the right amount of quality. And he repeatedly said that there's big money clearly available. The money that wasn't spent in the summer rolls over, if you like, and then you get the new television deal as well. So the justification really was It was more of what Arsene Wenger sort of hinted at various press conferences, that the issue this summer was that they didn't think there was anyone that was good enough to improve the squad at a sensible price. Therefore, just spending. And I suppose the argument against that is successive transfer windows. You'd say maybe there might have been a striker, or maybe there might have been a central midfielder. You can understand in one transfer window why it might be difficult to find the right player, but you could argue that they've had problems in a few transfer windows, and then that might, you might say, that points a deeper lying issue. But I think sometimes that some people say, well, leaving money in the bank is a waste, but I don't really go along with that completely, because I think that what would be daft is to just spend the money to always be at the point where you've spent all your money, because then if a Sanchez or an Ozil or a Cech does come up in, say, in January or next summer, then you're obviously restricted straight away. So I can understand the logic of keeping money back if the right player isn't available at a given time, because it's not like the money goes away anywhere. Yeah. It just rolls over. So I can understand that, and I do think that. I think with the transfer window, sometimes it bubbles up into a sort of crescendo of Arsenal must sign someone. And I think at the start of the window, the big thing is that none of the players are the sort of main players at the moment. There's no great question mark over whether anyone will leave. Certainly there wasn't this summer. And I think at the start of the window, I didn't really expect Arsenal to buy a striker. You expected them to go for a goalkeeper, and they got Cech and maybe a central midfielder. But then I think that obviously the Coquelin and Cazorla partnership made him change his mind. And that, apart from that, I didn't ever really think that. But something sort of built around this idea of Arsenal need a striker, which sort of came a bit, but to sort of surprise me, really, because I sort of felt with Sanchez, I know he's not a central, sort of main central striker, but Welbeck, Walcott, Giroud and Sanchez as an option in that position, that the club always felt they were quite well off there. I think it was just because Arsenal themselves were interested in Benzema that took off, really. But once they couldn't get him, I don't think they were that bothered about anybody else. Mm. So the logic is we spend money when there's the right player available. Which I suppose sounds a bit boring, and you can say that you can't keep saying that every transfer window. I suppose that's the thing that you might level at them. But okay, yeah, I think the logic makes sense, and I think the squad that's being constructed is generally pretty good value for money.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people, that perhaps was the frustration for people, was that they could see that the bones of a really good squad is there, and just maybe with that little bit extra. But you know, Wenger himself said, you know, he's not afraid to spend money. He says, I'm aware that I have that reputation. So I mean, that's an interesting little comment on the side.
Yeah.
So he's not totally insulated from what people are saying and thinking.
No, and the Schneidlin was the one that surprised me a little bit, because I think that deal was pretty much set up in January, as much as these are, and then Arsenal just didn't sort of push the button on it at the start of the transfer window. And obviously Wenger's thinking was how would this affect Coquelin, really. I think that was his thinking, and maybe at the time as well Wilshere had come back and had played pretty well in the pre-season and at the end of the summer, so maybe that affected it. But that was the one I thought would happen that just didn't. And I think he was there to be bought, even though I know Man United came in for him later on, but I think Arsenal could have had him if they'd moved at the very start of the transfer window.
Away from Arsene Wenger, then, there were questions for the chairman, Sir Chips Keswick, about the payment made to KSE, Stan Kroenke, of £3 million for strategic and advisory services. And last year, the explanation was that, well, we proposed this fee and it was accepted and it was paid, and there was no real visibility or detail as to what that payment was. The same thing has happened this year. And there was an air, obviously, of tetchiness about the way that they were being questioned about this. And Sir Chips didn't seem to take kindly to a number of those questions. again, the thing is for strategic and advisory services. They're telling people we've already answered that question in full. For a club that is really mindful, let's say, of PR and of saying the right things and of getting the right message out there, why do you feel that there is such an air of like something is being hidden here? Like, I think people will, if they're given a straight answer, whether they like it or not, accept that answer. Because at least it's been given, you might not like it. But here it doesn't feel like they're answering the question. They're trying to obfuscate and to deflect away from it without really going into any detail.
Yeah, I think he gave a tiny bit more detail, but whether obviously people don't necessarily accept it or believe it. He sort of talks about an ongoing sort of advice that they were getting, which the best way you could kind of try and understand it was that he was suggesting that he mentioned commercial media and sporting operations. I mean, it's fairly unspecific, but that we speak to them. There's a sort of ongoing dialogue with people at KSE that help, and I know that there's staff from KSE that are over in London a fair bit. So it was as if that they feel that given that they lean on them that much, that there should be some sort of fee, but that there wasn't any, there was no sort of detail to it, and it clearly didn't sort of satisfy anybody. And I just think that they could make a lot better effort just saying this is being more specific about what it's for, mm-hmm. or if they feel that they can't be, explain why they think that. We know that Stan Kroenke has we know the culture of American sports ownership is that the owner takes a lot of risk when they buy a sports organization, and that some sort of profit or some sort of payments are considered more acceptable. And I think if that's the rationale, or whether there are specific services and as I said, I do know that employees from KSE are involved. There is a lot of cross work. I don't really know why they can't either be more specific about the work, or just say, look, you know, there's a revenue of 300 plus million. It's 1% of the revenue. We think for the risk that the owner takes, it's a non-executive directorship that him and his son have. This is, and people might not like that and might not think that that's right, but at least we would sort of understand where we stood with it. And I think that, I don't think the Sir Chips' sort of manner helps with it. He sort of gave the air of, you know, it was a bit dismissive, whether he meant to come across that way or not, he did. And I just think it could be handled however they think is the best way to, or however they justify it. I think they should just be straightforward, however they see why they're making the payment, and they should just explain it to people. And I think that would be a better sort of PR way of doing it, to be honest. I think that they're almost making a bigger thing of it by giving this sort of impression that they're uncomfortable and they don't want to answer it and all the rest of it.
They feel like they don't have to answer, or they're not accountable. Ultimately, yeah. You know, Kroenke is the guy, he's the majority shareholder. He can do that. And like you said, he is on record as being in praise of the Glazers, for example, who have taken money out of Manchester United, as we know. So, I mean, do you think there's perhaps part of the reason why they don't give a clear and frank explanation is because they can't, and they don't want to be seen as somebody who's sanctioning that kind of behavior, knowing, as you know, this whole issue of custodianship that the previous shareholders had.
Yeah, there is that. I think there is a sort of kind of cultural thing, and they're not quite sure how to answer it in a way that would satisfy people. And actually, the best thing to do is to stop worrying about that and just be straightforward about it, and either explain how much time is spent by people from KSE on Arsenal matters, which, as I say, I know that does happen, whether people from Arsenal also help out the sports organisations in America as well might be the case, but I know that there is a lot of crossover So either detail that, or if that isn't exactly the rationale, just say, well, this is why we think it's justifiable, and it's this percentage of the revenue. It's not sort of in the Glazer League of money that's coming out, but it clearly won't sit well with shareholders. But I just think that just to have a if they just had a sort of straightforward answer to it, then it kind of stops all the follow up and all the sort of feeling that something's not right about it. And I just think they should just be honest about it. And if there's obviously a different sort of culture in America about these sort of payments, but I just think it could certainly today, I think it could have been handled a bit more smoothly, really.
Did we hear anything at all from Kroenke himself? Did he say any words?
No, he didn't, and that's I think it's since he became majority owner, I think that's the first time he hasn't sort of said a few words at the start of the meeting. So whether it's because he's a bit mindful that there was this sort of feeling about this payment, I'm not sure. I don't know the exact reason. I mean, he was there, and his son was there as well, Josh Kroenke. So they've been to matches and a lot of the board meetings. I think pretty much all the board meetings. So they're my sense is they're more involved than or as involved as ever in the club. But I think it would be good if they did sort of. You know, there sort of seems to be a slight concern on their side that I'm not sure the reasons why he didn't address the meeting, but whether this payment, he thinks he's going to be heckled or anything as Sir Chips was. But I think that really, I think that if there is a line of communication and he explains, things are explained, I think that he might find that it's not actually as difficult as maybe they think, really. I think people just want to sort of feel like they know where they stand. And I think aside from this, there's obviously this issue over this payment, but actually I think that the model that he's run of basically letting Ivan Gazidis and Wenger be incredibly supportive of the manager and also the chief executive, and supported a lot of the infrastructure projects and given them put lots of faith in them in the transfer market. He doesn't go around putting pressure on them publicly. He doesn't try and take all the limelight. I think there's a lot of things as an owner that he does that I think most football clubs would want their owner to do, and you don't see that from all owners. But so now I just sort of think that I think they could handle this fee issue. I think the club generally could. I think they should just be straightforward about it. And even if they know that they might be giving an answer that not everybody will like, I think actually it's better to just give that answer rather than the impression of sort of Chips going around in circles over it.
Well, I guess he's doing nothing to rid himself of the silent stand moniker. Maybe the other thing as well is that if you don't say anything, you can't say anything wrong per se. You know, he must be, he's not a stupid man, obviously, so I guess he's sort of aware of the mood in general towards him and what surrounds him. And I think in some ways you're right that he is hands-off, and he's leaving the day-to-day stuff with the people who are definitely best placed to do it, yet at the same time he's taking a little bit out of it for himself or for his company, without really being able to justify that as well. So I think he's probably quite aware of how any sort of speech or any few words from him is going to go down.
Yeah, I think I don't know if he's hands off day to day. I'm sort of he's hands off in terms of not putting pressure. I think he's pretty involved in a lot of the decisions, but I think he's respectful of the sort of this is the footballing decision, and that's very much Arsene Wenger's territory. And in fairness, I suppose the other point that you could make is that I think we would all like to see the owners of Premier League clubs be more visible and communicate more with supporters. Anything I'd say is I think they're there today. They've done a few interviews. They have addressed shareholders. They're more connected than any of the other sort of big billionaire owners of clubs. That's the only thing I'd say. I'm not saying that we don't want more, but I mean, the idea that if you'd ever see Abramovich or Mel, or sort of the Glazer family or Sheikh Mansour at one of these meetings. Of, you know, I can't imagine that ever happening. So I'm not saying that makes it perfect at Arsenal, but you know, I think there is more openness from the board and the owners than you get at any other comparable club in England. Tottenham as well, with Joe Lewis, you know. As I say, I'm not saying that's perfect, but there's more access, and you get more of a feel for the people running the club at Arsenal than you get at any of the other clubs of that size.
All right, well, look, we'll see. No doubt things will continue to fall out from the AGM over the next day or so. But more importantly than that, I guess, is football. And that returns this weekend after the international break. Arsenal face Watford after what was a fantastic performance against Manchester United. Any word on the inside about Alexis's groin yet? Do we know anything?
I think the general feeling is that he'll be all right. I mean, Arsene Wenger said this morning that he was a bit worried and that he obviously would rather he hadn't played those games for Chile. He's not due back till this afternoon. I think they were Thursday afternoon they were training. So that will be the sort of time, you know, the next 48 hours we'll know for sure on the next, you know, it will be very much done on two training sessions really. But certainly the information that they've had from Sanchez and Chile is that he should be okay for Saturday, so we'll see. And then the other ones really, Koscielny, I think there'll be a late test on him, and Arteta and Flamini will be back in the squad. So it seems mostly a clean bill of health, but obviously the whole Sanchez situation and just the amount that's sort of demanded of him both for club and international is a sort of ongoing question, I suppose.
There'd be some who would say that, look, Arsenal are playing Watford at the weekend and they should be able to beat Watford without Alexis Sanchez, regardless of how important he is, and he is obviously hugely important for Arsenal. But Arsenal have got Bayern Munich in the Champions League next week. Could it not be argued that Watford is a more important game for Arsenal's season than the one against Bayern Munich?
It could, I think, if you say that Arsenal, the big competition that Arsenal might be able to win is the Premier League, and you'd probably say the Champions League is less likely, you know, far less likely, and especially after losing the first two games, you might not even get out of the group. So, yeah, I think, and I sense that Arsene Wenger thinks that as well, to be honest. He probably wouldn't quite spell it out in those terms, but I think with the team selections that he's made this season in the Champions League does suggest that he's really going all out for the Premier League this season. I think we pretty much know his what he sees as his best team at the moment. Maybe depends of Gabriel and Mertesacker maybe as one of the centre backs. But aside from that, pretty much every other position you could sit down and pick the team now before the game and know what he's going to do. And I think we'll see that team in the Premier League, and we'll see where there'll be a few changes in the Champions League. He'd obviously say, well, you know, I've got however many 20 players and they're all of the same level and all the rest of it, but he has a best 11, and it's the 11 that we keep seeing in the Premier League.
And obviously they then have to continue where they left off against Manchester United. The front three, or particularly Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez and Theo Walcott, the way that they combined against Manchester United is something obviously that Arsenal fans will want to see more than once, more than in a big game against Manchester United, more than as a response to a disappointing result against Olympiacos. You know, there are a number of contributory factors to that performance. It'll be interesting to see whether they can do that after this international break, or perhaps there isn't as much pressure or as much focus, but people want to see them play like that more often.
Yeah, that's going to be I think with Arsenal getting that, yeah, I think with sort of first, it sounds a bit obvious, but the first goal is always really, is really critical, because where Arsenal come unstuck, especially at home in the last sort of back end of last season and the start of this season, is teams seem to be able to defend against them in numbers and then sort of play on the break. But against Man United, getting that early goal just opened up the whole game. And then you really see Ozil, Sanchez, Walcott. I suppose the test for them is to do it in those games where it's been 0-0 for a while and it's starting to get a bit a bit tense around the ground and everything like that. And that's, I think those situations are still, I think there's still a slight question mark whether they can regularly open up teams that play in that way against them, or whether they might get undone a bit, as they did against West Ham in that sort of style a few times too often throughout the season. So I think the signs are that all three of those are really, really close to their best at the moment. Sanchez scored three goals on international duty. Walcott scored another goal. They all seem really close to their peak at the moment. And I think Ramsey as well will... I think there were signs, he's sort of missing his goal touch at the moment, but I thought there were signs in the way he started against Man United that he was coming back to where he was a couple of seasons ago. So it's very exciting if they all carry on that level. But I think it's just sort of unlocking those teams that play a certain style against Arsenal. There seems to be a pattern of how teams try and set up against Arsenal, and consistently being able to overcome that will be vital.
Sure. All right. Well, look, we'll see how they get on. Obviously, midweek in the Champions League. Jeremy, thanks very much indeed.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Thank you indeed to Jeremy. You can find him on Twitter @JWTelegraph. I think I'm just checking here now. Yes, @JWTelegraph. That's where you'll find him. And of course, in the Telegraph. If you have noticed, and if you're an eagle-eared listener, what's the equivalent of an eagle-eyed listener, eagle-eared, bat-eared, elephant-eared? Who hears really well? German Shepherds, they hear really, really well. You might have noticed a slight change in my voice between the last bit and this bit, and that's because it's now 11:13 at night, and I have been out, yes, at an award ceremony. The Webb Awards were held in the RDS Concert Hall tonight here in Dublin, and it's all about the Webb in Ireland and who's the best at stuff and things, right? That's how it goes. So what's the best website for sport, or what's the best app, and what's the best thing, and what's the best other what's it? And there was a category for best podcast, and I was in twice in that particular category. Once for this very podcast, the Arseblog Arsecast, and the other for my other podcast that I do. It's called the 738 AM Podcast. In that podcast, I just like chat to people. It's one of those conversational interview podcast type things, and it won. That's what won. Amazing. So I'm sitting here now with a glass of bourbon, and I've just eaten a Marks and Spencer's pork pie, because, you know, why shouldn't you eat a Marks and Spencer's pork pie on the night that you win a prestigious award? Yeah, I mean, if there's a good time to eat a Marks and Spencer's pork pie, well, every time, let's face it, every time is a good time to eat a Marks and Spencer's pork pie, but this was a particularly good time to eat a Marks and Spencer's pork pie. So if you want to check that podcast out, you can by going to the website, castaway.media/738am, or you can search for the 738am podcast on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use, and you'll see the archives. There's good people in there. There's like Mark Maron, Dara O'Brien, Lenny Abrahamson, the film director, John Ronson, the excellent John Ronson, who I have to give some props to. I don't know if you actually heard this week the Adam Buxton podcast. If you don't know who Adam Buxton is, you should find out, because he's extremely, extremely funny. And he was He's done two of my favourite ever things, because I'm a huge David Bowie fan. So to see him do the little skit that he did with the Low album, and also one called Cobbler Bob. If you just look up Adam Buxton Low and Adam Buxton Cobbler Bob on YouTube, and you're a David Bowie fan, come back and thank me afterwards. It's fantastically funny. But anyway, on the Adam Buxton podcast this week, John Ronson recorded a while ago, in fairness. He was talking about his favourite podcasts, and he mentioned the Arse Blog Arsecast, and then he was very kind on Twitter as well, talking about the interview I did with Dara O'Brien. And you know, so thanks, John. Thanks, I appreciate it. It was great, and your dog is awesome. I like your dog Instagram stuff. You guys know me at this point. I am a total sucker for dog Instagram. Anything that's got a dog in it, I'm like, in there, I'm straight in. But anyway, check out John on Twitter, on Instagram, and make sure you read all his books, because they're just brilliant. Anyway, thanks for all the shouts out, and thank you to everyone who listens to this podcast as well, because it's great. I like it. I like doing this, you know? Maybe I'm a little bit in my cups at the moment, but, you know, it's good. I like being behind a microphone, and I like that when I talk into a microphone and put it out there, other people like to listen to it too. So thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it. Now, we should move on to what's actually relevant to this podcast, rather than me just sort of half-drunkenly rambling. And, Watford, tomorrow, 5:30. 5:30 kickoff, away from home. I don't know what that means. I don't think that means anything, does it? I mean, kickoff times, days, it's all pretty much irrelevant. None of it really matters. I don't think it has any great effect on us whatsoever. We like to maybe look for patterns that don't necessarily exist. What's our record in 5:30 kickoffs? I don't know. Away from home, 5:30 kickoffs? I don't know. I don't care. I just don't care. And we're playing Watford tomorrow. Can we beat Watford? Of course. Can Watford beat us? Of course. That's football. Who knows what might happen? We got to see what's going on with the team. Mikel Arteta is fit. Matthew Flamini is fit. We don't know about Alexis. His groiny groin. Come on, Alexis' groin. I watched that movie Inside Out this week about the girl, the animated one with the girl and all the things are in her head, joy and sadness and all that kind of stuff. It was great. I thought it was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. I'm a sucker for a great animated movie. But anyway, maybe that's what's going on inside Alexis's groin. He doesn't have joy and sadness. He's got fitness and non-fitness and pain and no pain. And those guys are scrapping it out right now for Alexis's groin. Think about it. Probably couldn't get away with that as a kid's movie. But, you know, there you go. So if he's fit, he plays. He's got to play. I'm not that invested in Bayern Munich in midweek. I want us to beat Watford more than I want us to beat Bayern Munich. But maybe that's because of the proximity, you know. After we beat Watford, if we beat Watford, then I'll be more invested in the Bayern Munich game. But for now, I think really we've got to be looking at like what happens in the Premier League is the most important thing, right? Europe, it'd be great to do more, but like we've kind of fucked it. So, you know, I'm all into the Premier League at this point. So what else? What else has happened? I don't know what else has happened. I think I should probably at this point try and say goodbye and put an end to this particular podcast. You can find loads of AGM stuff on the website if you like. There's a great big huge AGM report from Tim Stillman. It's taken me about 3 goes to say Tim Stillman. Didn't work out like that the first time. It was like Tim Stillman. But that's my fault. That's nothing to do with Tim. On Arseblog News, you should check that out. There's also a transcript of Arsene Wenger's speech to the AGM. That was good. Inspiring. And, there you go. I don't know what else. What else can I tell you? I don't think there's much. There really isn't. A lot of people sent me a tweet this week about Phil Collins releasing an autobiography. But why? Why would you send that to me? You know how I feel about Phil Collins. Truly, he is history's greatest monster. I don't want to read that book. I don't want to read that book. Why would I want to read that book? I mean, I'm not one for book burning. I'm all for words and literature, and I'm all for people actually sitting down and reading books and not spending their lives watching Kardashians and those kind of grotesque monsters. But even the Kardashians, dreadful people as they are, and they are dreadful, and I hope they're all eaten by mountain lions or some other wild creature. I'm not particularly fussy about which wild animal eats them. A bear would be good, or a, you know, an ocelot. Yeah, that'd be fine. Look, I'm not picky, I'm just saying. But they're not as bad as Phil Collins. Phil Collins did In the Air Tonight, you know. It's just... it's kind of a depressing way to end a podcast, isn't it? God, what are we going to do? We need something to slightly cheer us up here. I don't know what I could... What could it be? What could we have? What could we have right now that could make us feel better and make us feel less depressed about the world in which Phil Collins has got more money than you and I will ever see in our lives? I don't know what it could be. Oh, my God. Fuck this up. Oh, hang on. What about this?
Crescimento e gol.
Autogol Van Persie. That's what he should name his next kid. Autogol Van Persie. Right up there. Come on, Robin, keep it up. You're doing well. We're loving what you're doing at the moment. Just keep it up, man. It's fantastic. We're all enjoying it. A huge amount. I'm pretty sure he thought he would never bring joy to Arsenal fans again, but he's managed it. He's managed it. The man has some talent, in fairness. But look, I think I'm going to go now. We've got Watford at the weekend. Then there's an Arsecast Extra on Monday with James. We look ahead to the game against Bayern Munich then. Fingers crossed we've got 3 points. Alexis's groin is all, you know, stretchy and moist and good stuff. And we'll take some 3 points and then and just keep going after what we did against Manchester United. All right. So I think I should probably drink this drink now. And thank you very much indeed for listening. I'll catch you on the next one. All right. Until Monday on the Arsecast Extra. Cheers. Bye-bye. The Vapors and Turning Japanese right here on Holy God FM. Time now to go to our electronic box of post. If only there was a shorter way of describing the missives that you send to us via the medium of the WWW internet. This one comes from Robin. He says, Dear Holy God FM, I'm feeling very sad. I've had a terrible, terrible week. In fact, the last couple of months of my life have been so, so, so hard. I'm just not enjoying life the way that I used to. Everyone loved me for a while, and now it seems that they all hate me. What can I do about this? How can I find redemption? Well, Robin, as I always say, if you turn to the light of God and give yourself unto Him, He will forgive you, and you will be bathed in His light forevermore, and you will feel much, much better. Except He won't do it for you, He already told me. He said, if He writes in, just tell Him He's a cunt. Who am I to argue with the man upstairs, eh? So, Robin, you're a cunt. Right, taking us up to the news, here's one that even old Father Dermot likes. He dances around the sacristy to this one all the time. This is Mantronics. Got to have your love on Holy God FM.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.